The Medical Alley podcast is brought to you by MentorMate. Custom software needs vary significantly. Whether you're powering a medical device, overhauling your back-end architecture, or reimagining your patient experience, MentorMate can help. Harnessing the technical excellence of Bulgaria, MentorMate provides end-to-end software services in all sectors of healthcare. With deep expertise in design, development, cloud, and software support, MentorMate helps healthcare clients administer world-class care through technology. Learn more at MentorMate.com.
Hello, and welcome to Medical Alley Association's newest addition to our podcast lineup, At the Table. Through this brand new series, we will explore how policy affects the healthcare community here in Minnesota's Medical Alley and beyond. It's not always easy to decode bills and policy proposals, so we're bringing you to the source. With exclusive interviews in every episode, you'll get an inside look at what's happening at the national and state level as we sit down with lawmakers, policy shapers, and lobbyists. I'm your host, Gabriella Spence, Federal Policy and Advocacy Manager here at Medical Alley Association. Joining me for our inaugural episode is Congressman Tom Emmer, who represents Minnesota's 6th Congressional District. His constituency spans the western and northern suburbs of the Twin Cities and includes the central Minnesota hub, St. Cloud. This is the Congressman's 4th term, and he currently serves as chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, as well as ranking member for the House Financial Services Task Force on Financial Technology. Congressman Emmer, welcome. Wonderful to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Gabriella, thank you for having me. And again, I'm just going to compliment you. We've known how talented you were, but these podcasts that you are starting just take it to a whole new level.
I agree. Thank you for that. And excited to have you again as our inaugural one. I'm just going to jump right in because there's a lot of ground to cover and we got a short amount of time. You're involved in some really interesting caucuses. So I'd like to start by talking about a few of them. Give us an overview of the Personalized Medicine Caucus. What kind of work do you do, and what do your colleagues aim to accomplish through this caucus?
Well, the Personalized Medicine Caucus is, I believe, critical to help us bring attention to new biomedical innovations and to advance policies that help American patients who are affected by things like cancer and other devastating diseases. It's that vehicle to try and raise awareness. All patients, as you know, Gabriella, are all patients and the diseases that people experience are unique. And the therapy and treatment options that they have available should be just as unique. Through the Personalized Medicine Caucus, or better yet, let's just call it Personalized Medicine, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is personalized to that individual and that disease, their experience with that condition. We can improve patient outcomes through early detection and thereby also increase efficiency and lower costs of treatment. Personalized medicine, in fact, has the potential to save lives and revolutionize treatment. It gives physicians the ability to treat patients with comprehensive and holistic treatment plans that are individualized to the patient. And that's what ultimately improves outcomes. Like so many families, I've had this experience. Cancer had a devastating impact on our family. We lost my sister 20 years ago. She was way too young, 38, and she passed from breast cancer. And I will just tell you, Gabriella, in her memory, we're going to continue to fight for individualized treatment options for other families. I remember I would have done anything, and I know my folks would have done anything for Bridget. But 20 years ago, we didn't have some of the options that we have today. We need to look at breaking down all the barriers that exist to new early stage treatments and therapies that could help people who are in the situation that my sister was in 20 years ago. For example, PGX, pharmacogenomics.
It's a mouthful. You did a great job.
That's why we all call it PGX, right? This is an area that we've been working on as a caucus, and I believe it's an incredibly viable path that we need to explore. 99% of the population has a genetic variant that impacts how their body responds to a pharmaceutical drug. and more than 91% of the population is unable to process medications in the way that that medication is intended. Every person's unique genetic makeup affects drug efficacy, absorption rates, dosage, and as a result, patient safety. PGx is one of these areas that can provide information necessary to the clinician, which will enable improved decision-making regarding prescription medications. Although numerous studies have demonstrated just how critical PGx is to patient care, it hasn't yet been broadly adopted in our healthcare system. This is one of the reasons that the Personalized Medicine Caucus is so important. We need to make sure that clinicians can be, they can be uncertain of how to use PGx. We got to make sure that we enlist pharmacists in the effort with the clinicians so that they combined can determine what the best medications are to prescribe, again, for that particular individual who's experienced whatever the disease is that their unique situation is challenged with. Maybe that's a mouthful, but that's why it's so important.
Absolutely. There are so many points I want to touch on here. I'm going to try and remember them chronologically. First and foremost, thank you for sharing that really personal story. So sorry for your loss, but I'm grateful that it's made you a really powerful advocate for this innovative technology and ability to care for patients in a more holistic way. I also love that you kind of identified one of the barriers to making this much more of a commonplace, usage of care, or maybe care model is a better word for it. Kind of that knowledge, bridging that knowledge gap by bringing the pharmacists in to work with the physicians. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. I'm wondering if you can maybe identify if there are any other barriers you've come across when trying to advocate for this personalized patient-centric approach.
It's funding. Who's going to pick up the bill, how it gets covered under insurance. It's like anything else, Gabrielle, and you've spent enough time on the Hill that sometimes it's like turning a super tanker at sea, but you're not going to get that ship to turn unless you start getting people on board the ship. So it really is raising awareness. That's why I brought up PGx, because I think it's one of the more exciting things. I wish we would have been talking about this 20 plus years ago, because perhaps my sister and many others just like her would still be here with us today. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you recognizing that. But look, Bridget lived a great life. We just want to make sure that people who are faced with this right now have a chance to continue to fight and live on it. It's as we learn more and more about the genetic variants and how personal the experience is, not just emotionally, but physically, right? That's where the awareness, people need to understand, we're going to get to the point, I believe, where based on a person's genetic makeup, based on the disease that he or she is fighting, we're going to be able to have the clinicians and the pharmacists combine to do almost a laser approach, personal to that patient and that disease, which is going to be more successful than what we do right now, which, people are doing the best they can. But in the past, you do more of a needle in a haystack approach. You're going to use everything trying to find that needle, but it's not necessarily starting laser focused on the needle. And that's really where we're trying to go with the Personalized Medicine Caucus, raise awareness so that other members of Congress understand the great breakthroughs that are out there, where we already are, so we can move forward. And the barriers are one, people just don't know enough about it. You got to have more clinicians and pharmacists educated in knowing how to apply it and how to interpret it. And then you've got to have, the different health systems accepting it. Mm-hmm. And I think we on the Hill and you through your efforts through Medical Alley, we can have we can make a big difference in making this thing become reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to pivot a little bit. We could talk about this for another 4 hours, but I don't think people will listen for that long. So I'm going to pivot a little bit. I want to keep innovation in mind, but I want to move on to blockchain. You are a key leader in Congress on this issue. In fact, you are the chair of the Congressional Blockchain Caucus. There's a healthcare angle I want to delve into, but I wonder if you could give our listeners as high level as you can get, a high level overview on what blockchain technology is.
Well, in order for me to do that, I have to tee up how I even became familiar with blockchain, which starts,
starts with
something called cryptocurrency, which a lot of your listeners are going to go, what? I've heard of that. Isn't that a bad thing? Well, no. No, cryptocurrency really came online after the economic challenges that we experienced in 2008. And it's not going away, but cryptocurrency operates on a blockchain platform. A blockchain is an open source code that people who are familiar with how to build it can get in and they can build off the blockchain without having to disclose personal information. You and I could disclose information to each other in this open source network, but others who are participating in the network would not necessarily be able to identify who we are. It's a peer-to-peer open source network, which I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are going to go, what's that? I don't understand. Bottom line is, it is a platform for cryptocurrency. It is a platform that ultimately may be a solution to our cybersecurity issues. And by the way, it has huge implications in the healthcare space, specifically the health records and our health information, which I'm happy to talk about. But that's probably more complicated than you want, but people who write code will understand what I'm talking about, people who work in the area. The rest of us understand that this is the type of platform technology that enables us to get on the internet and actually exchange information.
You made that both comprehensive and interesting. Really well done. I can tell you're well-versed in this. Thank you for meeting me at my level. I'm sure our listeners may be a little bit more educated on this than I am, but I appreciate it. And you're almost beat me to the punch. I'm glad you didn't, but you teed me up great. I want to get into that healthcare piece you mentioned. I want to hear from you. How do you see blockchain impacting health records? And I'd also love if you can comment, because you've been reading my mind, so I'm trying to get ahead of you a little bit. I want to hear a little bit about what you think Congress's role is in this space.
Well, I'll do it a little backward with your last piece first, because it really relates to the Personalized Medicine Caucus. It's the same idea. You know, I read a book about 6 years ago called The Age of Cryptocurrency, which was my first introduction to this. When I finished the book, I mean, I told my legislative director at the time, I need more. I want more. You got to help me understand this better. At that point, he told me that if I wasn't the most knowledgeable on the topic in Congress, I was definitely in the top five. Well, Gabriella, imagine you're being told that you just read this breakthrough technology that supports this cryptocurrency idea. And there's only five people or less out of 535 that understand what it is. That's a little daunting because look, in this internet age that we're in, Gabriella, government had better figure out how to become more nimble and more flexible. Otherwise, all these advancements and the people who are making them are going to leave us behind. And that's not what we want to do. You got to have some involvement with government so that we can have some regulation. I would suggest light touch so that people can operate safely within the environment. But blockchain itself, which again is that platform that supports things like cryptocurrency, it's been deployed already in the logistics business. You can literally, for food safety purposes, trace a food item right back to the field that it was taken out of.
I've heard of that, but I've not put that together, that's how they do it through blockchain.
Well, and here's where you asked me about the healthcare space. Blockchain can actually offer a solution for healthcare organizations because of its potential to transform the way we view and utilize electronic health records. A single global blockchain could serve as a secure global electronic health record. Now, that might be a little intimidating to some people out there, But if you think about this, I told you it's a peer-to-peer open source network where people can put their information on the blockchain. It's entirely secure, right? It's not necessarily identifiable to the individual. So you have privacy protections, you have security, cybersecurity protections, because it's open. Ultimately, this could lead to a publicly accessible provider chain with the ability to update patient information in real time. Much like I told you in the logistics space, you can trace a food item right back to its origin in real time. Now, the most important aspect of this is in the blockchain, patients would still control their own data, and a patient would be able to choose when and to whom to grant access to his or her healthcare records. I can tell you there are companies right now that are beginning to get into this area. And frankly, you asked what the Blockchain Caucus is all about. We should be leaning in to do all that we can in Congress to help these companies or entrepreneurs utilize and support this, I believe, limitless technology.
So what I'm hearing you say, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hearing you say that this could solve for the current very siloed system we have with health records. Right now, if you go to a physician that's even in a different network, even sometimes still within the same network, they're not communicating to provide that kind of one-stop shop record of all the visits you've had, the procedures you've had, but this could solve for that. Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. So let's use this example. I started by telling you about cryptocurrency. Let's say that Gabriella and Tom have a value exchange that we want to perform. I'm going to do some service. I'm not very good at remodeling, but I'm really good at demolition. So Gabriella wants to redo her kitchen. I'm going to agree to demolish her kitchen so she can rebuild it. And I'm going to do it for Bitcoin. So Gabriella would go to her wallet, which is on this peer-to-peer open source network. So everybody can see what's out there, but they don't see Gabriella's name. But Gabriella will take her Bitcoin and she will transfer it to Tom Emmer using the blockchain platform. Okay. Imagine if that was your medical record. And I'm a healthcare provider. Maybe you've got several, right? Several different healthcare providers, different, you know, organizations, healthcare organizations. Like you say, they're siloed today. But what if I have all of my medical records, much like I have my cryptocurrency in my virtual wallet? I have all my medical records, my medical history on the blockchain. Now, when I'm treating with Gabriella, Gabriella says, I need access to your medical records. I, the patient, can give you permission to see the entire medical record file through the blockchain network. That's a rough description, but that's how it would work.
I think that was very an illuminating example. I also love the scenarios you painted. Not only are you demoing my kitchen for me, which I would love, just save the countertops because they're new. I also love that you've made me a doctor. I've never been interested in being a doctor, but I'm kind of okay with it now. So thank you. I'd like to cap off our conversation with a topic I think you've kind of been building on. So I'm interested to see how you're going to kind of tie in the other pieces we've already mentioned, but a topic that's receiving significant and long overdue attention across the country, which is eliminating disparities in healthcare. This is an expansive issue that needs holistic solutions, some of which we've already talked about again. Tell us about how you and your colleagues are approaching this issue. What do you feel has been accomplished, maybe just in this Congress in the last? What's on the horizon? And bringing us a bit closer to home, how do you see Congress's work impacting Minnesotans in a positive way?
Well, I really appreciate the question, Gabriella. Obviously, it's imperative that we ensure proper health care for all Americans, including our most vulnerable populations. one area, by the way, that saw an exacerbation of disparities due to the COVID-19 pandemic is rural America, greater Minnesota, more rural communities. I actually led a letter to the Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra, urging changes to reporting requirements that would lead to hundreds of rural providers being forced to return COVID-19 funds to Washington, D.C. That was not the intent, obviously. I'm going to be introducing the GRAD Act next week with Representative Grace Meng from New York. Grace and I have done some other work together to streamline the J visa application process for foreign students applying for admission to a graduate medical education or training program. I'm sure that your listeners are well aware that we have a current physician shortage. And this bill would help fill in those gaps, especially in underserved areas, rural communities all across this country. Recently, I joined in a letter in support of Medicare Advantage, which serves a vast population of Medicare beneficiaries in our state, the great state of Minnesota. And this will continue to expand access to health care for our seniors. So I've given you rural Minnesota, I've given you the physician shortage, Medicare Advantage. But look, we need to continue hearing from stakeholders like you and the folks at Medical Alley on what is working and where the barriers to innovation exist. Bureaucratic red tape, as you know, Gabriella, stifles innovation and the administration of care. Understanding where those problems exist will help us address them as we move forward. And we're just going to have to continue to gather further evidence-based data to educate the public on the benefits of new advancements like personalized medicine. But there's some of the ways that I believe we can be eliminating disparities, both across the country and here in my home state of Minnesota.
I am incredibly encouraged to hear the items you just mentioned, the work you guys are doing. I also completely agree. Data is going to play a critical role in helping us keep bridging the gaps. We've gotten some really, we've gotten measures here and there, and I don't want to discount them. The bipartisan work that Congress is doing, the work happening through the White House and the various agencies, but completely agree. Data is going to be critical, especially for the not hard to reach, just not reached often enough populations. Thank you for that information. That's our time. But before we sign off, is there anything else you'd like our listeners and the Medical Alley community to know?
Yeah, just your people should know that they're incredibly important to our future. We all just came through an incredibly difficult period in our history. We should celebrate the fact that we have survived this thing, and we should be excited about getting together and just being Americans, not Republicans and Democrats, but Americans. I'll tell you what, we just came through the 4th of July, Gabrielle, and I was reminded we're going to get along. I told some people on the parade route, they were great. But just a quick story, someone had a differing opinion and I stopped and I said, hey, look, glad to see that you made it through the pandemic. Glad to see you're healthy, happy to be moving forward. But today we're all getting together and we're going to be like a good Minnesota family that's sitting down at the table. We're going to say a short prayer. We're going to eat. We're going to enjoy each other. And then we'll fight. All right. So let's try to keep that in mind, that we're all Americans at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. And while we might have some disagreements, what we have in common far outweighs whatever disagreements we might have. And great that you're doing this. Glad that you're at Medical Alley. I think they're going to benefit greatly. So are you. Look forward to working with you, Gabriella, as we move forward on some of these great innovations. And it's a big future.
Congressman Emmert, you are such a joy to converse with. Thank you for being on our first At the Table podcast. Thank you for sharing your insights and your expertise and all the work you do for not just Minnesota's Medical Alley, but our nation as a whole. Truly grateful for you. I'd like to give a big thank you to our listeners. Your continued support allows us to bring you amazing conversations like this one. So, if you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing to the Medical Alley podcast and giving us a 5-star rating. We'll see you next time on At the Table.